In this series of podcasts, we offer stories of innovations and impact and visionary thinking at the leading edge of finance.
In this episode of Reimagine Money, RSFer Kelly Buells talks to Ryan Knuckle of Transportation Alternatives, an organization that promotes biking and alternatives to driving in New York City, and Colin Beaven, an RSF donor advisor who's known for his work with No Impact Man. The conversation dives into issues of sustainability and system change. To read the full interview, check out our summer newsletter.
How long have you been with Transportation Alternatives?
Yeah, I've been with TA one way or another for a long time, and seeing the organization change a lot. I mean, New York City has changed a lot, and those two things go together. We've been around since 1973, but for a long time, TA was kind of the voice in the wilderness, you know, saying, wouldn't it be great if one day we put in a lot of bike lanes to keep people safe and had better bus service and all these great things they're doing in other cities around the world. And then lo and behold, New York City actually started to do it, and our crazy ideas weren't crazy anymore. They were, you know, things that you could see and feel and experience just by leaving your house. So,
our mission is to transform the way the world works with money, and part of our belief is that money actually facilitates human relationships.
Mm-hmm.
Well, Colin, maybe I'll just do a couple questions for you. I am curious why you chose to work with Transportation Alternatives, besides that they're the best. And how did you find them?
Oh, gosh. I've been involved with TA since the No Impact years, so exactly how I came to be part of TA, I don't know. But I'll tell you that the reason I'm interested in biking is, there's lots of reasons why I'm interested in an organization that promotes biking, but I think that there are two main areas where our personal lives and the gigantic overall sustainability and climate change and running out of oil agendas intersect, and those two areas with our personal lives, and those two areas where they're so obviously intersect are, one is local food, and two is transportation, because people can easily, because people are putting food in their bodies, they understand that you know, it becomes very intimate to their lives, and they, you know, they understand all the issues involved. And similarly, because people are moving their bodies around, they quickly understand the issues involved there too. So, and also, just like local food, biking is both a huge sustainability issue, but it's also a real quality of life and health issue, because, you know, as long as we're transporting ourselves around in metal boxes, we don't use our bodies, and we get fat and unhealthy. And you know, biking, just as people who eat local food tend to be the healthiest from a nutrition standpoint, people who bike, studies show, are the happiest of commuters. So it's just, you know, biking to me is it's an entry point into, just like local food is an entry point into the larger agenda that includes sustainability and system replacement. People talk about system change. I prefer the term system replacement. Food is an entry point, and biking is an entry point too. That's why. And so that's why I kind of came to TA. And then, of course, you know, it's just, there's in biking and the broader question of livable streets, what we have is this whole question of making a city that's both less reliant on fossil fuels, but also better to live in at the same time, and not just better to live in just for the cyclists, but once you have a city that's designed for people to self-propel by biking or walking or even mass transit, the streets themselves become better to live on. So I even saw a study that said that the more bikers there are in the street, the lower the crime rate on that street, and that's because there's more eyeballs.
Mm-hmm.
So those are the kind of reasons I got involved.
I think that's a great way of thinking about it. I mean, we often think of the environment and environmentalism as these exotic, far-off places where no one, you know, where no people are. But the environment that TA focuses on is the one in between our buildings, right? I mean, New York City has the lowest, New Yorkers have the lowest carbon footprint of anyone in the U.S. because the majority of us get around not by automobile, by public transit, by walking, by biking. So we find that you can make this huge impact by looking at the way our streets are designed, the ways that we're getting around. And the food connection is an important one because just as you've seen green markets explode across New York City and other cities, I think the next green market is Play Streets, which is this program that we've worked on the last couple of years where it's basically like a block party but with structured activity for kids. So you shut down a street to cars for a weekend or, you know, every weekend in a month or in the summer, and it becomes this place for kids to play. And we did a study of Play Streets in New York City, which were just kind of starting to catch on. And the majority of kids who are out there, you know, hula hooping and playing hopscotch and all these classic New York City street games, the majority of them said if they weren't there, they would have been inside either watching TV or playing video games. So these small changes in your behavior point the way towards, you know, reduced obesity and reduced diabetes and asthma and all these major public health crises that our cities are plagued with. You know, you can start to solve them by looking at food, but also looking at the way we get around, even if it's just walking to the subway. It's more than most people do.
Wow, it's connected so much to quality of life.
No, sure. Yeah. And then, you know, for us, the patron saint is Jane Jacobs.
That's funny. We're just about to read her book in a study group here.
I call it the broader principle, happier planet, happier people. Like, for the longest time, the conversation has, well actually, in the 70s, the big polluters deliberately did this. They set the environment, they set the conversation around environment, and what they did is they tried to cast environment against labor. Like, you know, if you have fewer, if you force us to reuse our beverage containers, then we're going to lose jobs and all this kind of stuff. So what they did was they were able to set up a conversation that was environment versus people. And I always say if there is any sort of grand intelligence or even, you know, any to the design of this universe, how nuts would it be if it designed a planet where the interests of the environment and the interests of the people are at odds? Of course they're the same when we look at them in the right way. So all these things that were like food and in biking, it's like it's a place where we get both happier people and a happier planet.
I'm curious to hear about the relationship between the two of you, but I just have another question similar to this topic, which is about sort of how you inspire change. And I guess I'm just thinking about all the drivers out there, but I mean, maybe calling from a personal perspective or even a system perspective, I'd love to hear how you both, you know, feel like you're inspiring change in the world.
Well, my approach up until now has been to inspire change by engagement. I mean, and that continues to be my approach in the political run. But the United States is a uniquely unpoliticized society. We're antagonistic towards politics, unlike Europe. Like in Europe, people sit around the cafes and talk about what the government should do, and even government is accepted. Where here in the United States, we even have arguments about whether government should exist. So, I think that the way one way to so and yet we need gigantic citizen engagement if we're going to make the types of system replacement that we need to make, right? And if we're going to get the job done in terms of reducing fossil fuel use and all the other big changes we have to make if we're going to actually let our culture survive. So the question is then, how do you get citizens engaged? Now, I am on the advisory council of 350.org, Bill McKibben's organization, which is a political organization. It's about getting people out on the street, telling politicians what they care about, right? So that's about basically energizing and activating the choir, let's say. problem is that the choir's not big enough. So how, in an unpoliticized society, do you actually enlarge the political choir? And my belief is that one way, and I think there are many ways, there's no exclusive way to do this stuff, but my work is about engaging people in our political issues by first getting them to engage in them in their personal lives. So asking them to make changes that are better for them. And in fact, one way that, you know, the No Impact Project, my nonprofit, does this is by trying to get people to bike. So, for example, let's say, like, you know, as a board member of Transportation Alternatives, I want to see changes for livable streets, and I want to see a citizenry that's engaged around that. One way to get people to be more engaged in the livable streets movement is first in their personal lives to get them to ride their bikes. Right? So it's hard to get somebody to come out and say, I want more bike lanes if they don't ride their bike first. And yet, you know, bike lanes are good for everybody. They make, you know, they reduce pollution on the street, they reduce pedestrian accidents, they make the street safer for seniors, they make the street safer for kids, all sorts of things. So everybody should be advocating for the bike lanes. But you can't actually get them involved in the politics until first you get them biking. So the area of change that I'm most interested in and the area of change that I work in is this question of citizen engagement by first intersecting with their personal lives.
Yeah, in terms of how to inspire change, I mean, we believe in the field of dreams principle. If you build it, they will come. And if you design a city that's centered around highways where the cheapest and easiest way to get around is to drive, then most people will. And you'll end up with pollution and physical inactivity and public health problems. For much of the last century, we designed cities around the automobile and took away some of the best things about cities, density, access to commerce, access to opportunity. So now I think, not just in New York, but a lot of places around the U.S., people are thinking about how we can build cities around people, around local commerce, around access to jobs and education and food and resources. And that means focusing on a street design that is at the human scale, where you can walk to the store, where you can hop on a bike and do both without fear, where you have access to public transit so you don't need the massive expense of owning a car to get, you know, in New York City, most trips are just a few miles long. There's no reason they can't be done walking, biking, or on transit. So in New York City, we have a city where most people have access to public transit, and most people choose it. You know, if you build it, they will come.
Great, and I bet that bike share program will help too.
Huge, yeah. It'll fill in a lot of gaps in the transit system. Try getting a cab to take you across town in less than half an hour. On a bike, you can do it in about 5 minutes.
So one of the things that I think is interesting is that Ryan's talking about design for change, and I was talking about citizen engagement for change. And I think it's really important to note that they're not mutually contradictory, but they build upon each other. Because what happens
Absolutely.
Is you need political support for the design change, and to get that political support, you need citizen engagement, and also the support of certain key citizens who have more than average political power. And then you get that political support, and then you get design change, and then this design change in turn encourages more citizen engagement, and then the two just keep beating on each other all the way out.